Sage gave Leia a sad smile. Sometimes, Leia, the kindest thing is to let them go. A long, wailing howl echoed through the trees. Charles raised his face to the sky and answered in a like voice so that their lone soldier understood there was help coming of one sort or another. If I take Jericho, Charles told Asiel, it's like as not I'll have to do the same with Devon. The words were a blow, even though Charles knew Asiel was well aware of that. Charles had only known the broken wolf his Da had brought here 60 years ago, but he knew that Devon, in his glory days, had had a knack for making and keeping friends. Jericho, Asiel, and even Bran had been friends of his. Devon will defend him, said Asiel, giving Charles a half-smile. Devon defends those he loves. That's part of what made him the man he once was. Leia stepped closer to Anna. You and I don't always see things the same way, she said. That is true, his mate answered, meeting Leia's eyes. I know you were tired, Leia continued. I know that this will only be a stopgap, but my mate gets so sad when the wildlings go on. He breaks his heart over them. It would take more than those two, said Anna, indicating Asiel and Charles, to keep me from trying to help. Bran isn't the only one who gets sad when the old ones die. Leia would think that Anna was speaking only of herself, but Charles knew that Anna was talking about Leia, too.
And us, said Brother Wolf. We regret, too.
After saying her bit, Sage had moved away from the dead. She wrapped her arms around her middle and frowned off into the distance. The dead usually didn't bother her much, a result of her early life as a werewolf, Charles had always supposed. It hadn't bothered him at all to take care of most of that rogue pack. Maybe it was just that she was upset about Jericho, who had saved her life once upon a time. Asiel addressed Charles. I've seen your mate almost die once today. That is enough times, I think. Charles agreed with him wholeheartedly, but he knew what Anna would do. He knew it was not his job to make her smaller, safer. It was his job to lift her up as high as she wanted to soar, and to kill anything that tried to interfere.
She'll be safe enough with all of us there, Charles said.
And there was a sharp yip of pain, and all of them ran toward the sound. Brother Wolf chose the change before Charles could decide if it was a good idea or not.
There are two werewolf wildlings nearing the end of their days, Brother Wolf told him. We are all of us wolves, but sometimes the only answer is fang and claw, and we can do this faster than the others.
More and more, Brother Wolf spoke to Charles in whole sentences, when previously he was more likely to communicate with emotions or wordless gestalt statements that conveyed an entire conversation as a whole. Charles thought that it was the need his brother had to speak to their mate that was causing the evolution. Leia had taken the lead. Brother Wolf contented himself with running beside Anna and following those who knew where they were going. The cave where Jericho had retreated wasn't a real cave, but a sheltered place where two great boulders rested against each other. It smelled lightly of Devon and more heavily of Jericho. From the scent layers, this was a place where Jericho slept more often than he used the small cabin they'd just left.
Jericho! Called Leia.
Coming!
Said a man's voice. Jericho's voice.
I have never heard Jericho sound like that, said Brother Wolf, in surprise.
Anxiety peaked in the whole group. In Brother Wolf's shape, Charles's nose was sharper. What had happened to Devon? Jericho's voice had sounded almost casual, and Jericho was never casual.
No one liked where they saw this going.
There was a shuffling noise. Then a muscled man emerged. He had to crawl to get out of the sheltered space, but he stood as soon as there was room. He had a cloth wrapped around his loins in a fashion that Charles hadn't seen in a long time.
It gave Jericho the appearance of wearing baggy shorts instead of an old bedsheet. Jericho looked much as he had the last time Charles had seen him. His beard and hair were long and scraggly, with bits of leaves and other forest detritus caught in it. His hair was tangled every which way and randomly hacked shorter here and there. His eyes were ice blue, the wolf dominant in that moment, at least. There was something odd about that cool stare. But Jericho looked away before Charles could put a finger on what bothered him. Jericho's body was fit and strong, which was a good thing. Hunger tended to destabilize even the most controlled werewolf, which none of the wildlings were to begin with. He hadn't, Charles thought, eaten any of the dead men, though it was usual for an out-of-control werewolf to eat his victims. Most of the wildlings were twitchy in human form, as if the wolf were ready to climb out at any moment. Jericho's body was very still and balanced on the balls of his feet. He glanced around at their group with his wolf-blue eyes, then away. He shivered. "Where is Devon?" asked Leia. He stopped, swallowed, and began again. "He wanted me to run. He doesn't want me to die. But I killed those men. The only rule is no killing. I had to tie him up in the cave." And that was more coherent sentences in a row than Charles had been able to get out of him in 10 years. To top off the performance, Jericho walked up to Charles, dropped to his knees, and presented his throat. "Well," said Anna, briskly, after a moment of silence, "that's all very dramatic and heartfelt, I'm sure, but we're pretty sure those men attacked you. Self-defense is always legal." Jericho eyed Anna. "No killing. The Merrok was very clear." Behind Jericho, a seal crossed to the cave and ducked in. "Those men belong to our enemy," said Leia. "A similar group killed Hester yesterday. Her mate followed by his own hand." Jericho swayed a bit then, and his eyes darkened to human blue.
"Felt that," he said. "Hester didn't like me at all."
For a second, he grinned widely.
"Damn near killed me the first time we met."
Then he blinked, and the human left his eyes again.
"Not sorry I killed them, but the rule is no killing."
"How did they find you?" asked Anna. "Do you know? Did you hear anything that can help us find them?" Jericho growled at her. Brother Wolf growled more savagely, and Jericho subsided.
"Don't do this," Sage said, apparently to herself, because her voice had been very quiet. "You don't need to do this."
Charles gave Sage a sharp look, but her attention was on Jericho. Jericho's attention was on Charles. Asiel exited the cave, and a very thin, patchy-coated wolf followed him, head low and tail tucked. Asiel nodded at Charles. He'd found Devon just as Jericho said he would. Charles looked carefully at Devon, but the wildling seemed unharmed, if not particularly happy. "Assume that we'll take care of an execution if it needs to happen," Anna told Jericho dryly. "Moving on to a different topic. Did you overhear anything they might have said? Any clues to who or what they were?" Jericho focused his ice-blue eyes on Charles's mate. Charles would have been happier if he hadn't done that.
"She said not to come here, to wait, that this attack is too likely to give her away," Jericho said in a hard, oddly deep voice. His voice changed again, becoming both lighter and quicker.
"She's not in charge, she is not the boss, and I don't know about you, but I'm more afraid of the boss than of her." And Charles realized that Jericho had taken Anna's question literally. He was repeating back exactly what they had said in his presence. And they had been talking about a she. Charles looked at Leia. He couldn't help it. But she was watching Jericho with her brows furrowed. Charles didn't think she'd quite figured out what Jericho was doing.
Our job, continued the wildling coolly, is to get the information from this one if he has it. No one will miss him for a long time. If we can't get it from him, then we hit the other one. Jericho sighed loudly and dropped into the first voice.
And that will be a cluster, because someone keeps taking out our surveillance equipment. I know. I don't like going in blind either.
Jericho stopped speaking.
Anna can help you, said Sage, intently. She just broke a 100-year-old curse on another wildling. I was there.
The first statement was a lie. Charles turned his attention to Sage, because he'd never heard her lie before. Even more interesting than the lie was the implication that she didn't believe Anna could help Jericho. Even though he'd once rescued her, and Charles remembered the incident pretty much the way she'd told it, she was scared of Jericho. Charles could tell that much, though her control was very good. Probably he and Jericho were the only ones who could smell it. Charles, because he had Brother Wolf, and Jericho, because he was mostly Wolf, even when he wore human skin.
Eth?
Asked Anna.
I killed him before he finished the sentence, said Jericho, smugly. He was probably going to say either, but you asked me what they said, not what I thought they were going to say.
Asil said, You are feeling talkative tonight, my friend.
He sounded a little suspicious.
There is something going on, said Brother Wolf. Something is wrong with Jericho.
Well, yes.
More wrong, said Brother Wolf intently. Differently wrong.
He just killed 7 people and has been waiting for 2 days for his death sentence, Charles reminded him. But I agree. Satisfied, Brother Wolf fell silent.
Did you kill them before they attacked you?
Asked Leia.
Don't,
Sage whispered. Jericho gave Leia his ice-blue stare.
They invaded my territory. They came with guns and sharp things, with wires and switches and buttons to make me tell them things. They wanted to take Bright. I couldn't let them do that. They said, Sage can't figure out where Frank Bright is, and she's had years. How hard is it to find the only black man among Brand Cornick's misfits?
Charles bolted. But it had taken him an extra breath to realize what Jericho had said. That short space of time allowed Sage to get a head start. As she ran, she grabbed her necklace. He had time to see her shift to her wolf as quickly as he could, felt the wave of witchcraft that allowed her to do so. Then a puff of smoke billowed in the air right in front of him. The acrid, greasy cloud filled his nose and mouth and left him coughing and gagging and trying to breathe. He plowed to a stop and tried to clean his nose with his paws, wiping his face on the ground when that didn't work. Asil passed him without hesitation, Leia and Juste on his heels. Anna stopped and pulled off her shirt. She wiped his face and paws with it. That did the trick, and he could breathe again.
Witchcraft, she said. I saw something burst right in front of you.
Smelled stale, said Brother Wolf. The magic was trapped in an object. We would have known if she were witchborn.
If she had that with her, Anna said, then she was prepared for us to find her out.
Yes. Sage was their traitor. He let himself process that, to grieve over that, later. He got to his feet and shook himself, trying to decide how to proceed.
Heya!
Called Jericho. The wildling had Devon beside him, and they were walking along the side of the mountain, about 20 feet above where Charles and Anna were. Devon still had his tail between his legs and was watching Jericho with uncertain eyes, probably wondering why Jericho had tied him up. Though it was hard to be certain with Devon.
She's following a trail, Jericho said. I know where it comes out. There's a shortcut. If they don't stop her before she gets that far, we can take her at the other end.
Charles and Anna made short work of climbing the slope until they were up on the path the wildlings were on. It didn't take them long to catch up. Jericho was not in an apparent hurry because he waited for them. As they neared, Jericho tilted his head and frowned at Anna.
I don't know you, he said. Should I know you?
Hello, Anna said as they drew close. We haven't met. I'm Anna, Charles's wife.
Jericho looked at her with blue eyes that shifted from wolf to human with an unhealthy speed.
The Omega?
She nodded.
Without tightening his muscles in warning, without a word or a sign, he jumped her. They rolled down the steep side of the mountain so quickly that Devon and Charles didn't catch up with them until they were nearly at the bottom. They rolled up against a tree and slammed into it, Anna letting out a grunt that had more startle than pain in it. Charles would have snapped Jericho's neck if Devon hadn't knocked him sideways, then stood in front of the tangle of bodies. His head was lowered, tilted submissively, his tail was tucked, and he was shaking like a wet horse in a snowstorm, but he still stood between them.
Second time in one day, Anna complained, with a tremor of shock in her voice. What is it with people? Did they forget their manners? Hello, how are you? No, I get the full tackle, like I was a quarterback.
If she was complaining, she wasn't badly hurt, though rolling down that rocky mountainside wouldn't have done her any good.
No manners at all, said Jericho's muffled voice.
Oh, God. Oh, God. You don't parade Circes like this in front of wildlings, you young idiot. What were you thinking?
It took Charles a second to realize that he was the young idiot Jericho was talking about. Charles growled. Jericho gave a shaky half-laugh that was full of tears.
I'm sorry. So sorry, God. I can think. I can breathe.
There was a little pause, and he said, in a lost voice, with a touch of panic,
What I can't do is let go. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt.
Well, I hurt, Anna said, in a grumpier voice than before. We just rolled down the side of a mountain. This time, there was a threat of panic in her voice.
Don't get me wrong, but I would really, really be grateful if you would let me up.
I can't, Jericho said. They were so fragile, these wildlings of his Da's. Dangerous as all get out. But they were fragile.
He's frightening our mate,
growled Brother Wolf.
If he doesn't stop, it won't matter how dangerous or fragile he is, he will be dead.
Devon whined anxiously, and Brother Wolf nosed him to reassure him that they wouldn't kill Jericho unless they had to. Talking seemed like a good idea if no one was to die, so Charles changed. He let his human shape come upon him more slowly than usual. That way, he could do one more quick change if he needed to be wolf again without pulling on the pack. Fully human again, though the stress of the last minute or so showed in that he was wearing buckskin and moccasins instead of jeans and boots, he stood up and shoved Devon aside.
It's okay, he told Devon, but I need to sort this out.
Anna's eyes were panicky, and he could see that she'd about reached her limit. Understandably, she didn't like anyone on top of her at the best of times. Brother Wolf would have just killed Jericho and been done with it. Death was coming for that one sooner rather than later anyway. But with his stepmother's accurate assessment of Bran's sorrow at losing another wildling, and the understanding that probably, unless Leia beat him to it, he was going to have to kill Sage, Charles had little taste for more death. Though at least, he thought with some relief, he would not have to kill Leia, nor meet his Da in mortal combat. Not yet. Instead of killing Jericho, Charles peeled the werewolf off his mate, while Anna helped by scrambling body parts out of reach as soon as he'd freed them. When Jericho's skin lost contact with Anna's, he screamed, his whole body locking up in agony. Charles finally took him all the way to the ground and pinned him face down. Wrestling with werewolves was complicated by the fact that weight didn't hold a werewolf unless his opponent was the size of an elephant, maybe. Joint lock still worked, though.
Move again,
Charles snarled, letting Brother Wolf's dominance color his voice.
And I'll break your neck, and you won't have to worry about touching my mate ever again.
Devon made a soft, frightened sound. Anna, on her feet and winded, said, Don't worry, Devon. He doesn't mean it.
But he did. Fortunately, the right person believed him, and Jericho subsided, panting and sweating and sobbing. Anna crouched and touched the skin on his arm with her fingers. She frowned a little, reaching with her other hand to touch Charles. Her pulse was still fast, and her grip was just a little too hard. She was using Charles to calm herself down. Jericho was lucky Charles didn't break his neck anyway, for the way the wildling had made his Anna's heart race with reflexive panic. As soon as Anna touched him, Jericho's whole body relaxed, though he still panted with stress.
"Gods!"
he said again. Carefully, Charles let him go, keeping himself between Anna and Jericho, without breaking Anna's grip on Jericho's arm, which left him too close to the other wolf. He liked to give himself a little distance if he might have to kill someone. A little distance gave him more options. He saw Jericho's eyes do the weird blue swirl shift to the ice of his wolf again, and for some reason, his long-dead grandfather's voice echoed in his head.
"You can always tell them by their eyes."
The old medicine man's hushed voice rang in his ears, as if his mother's father had been standing right behind Charles. He could picture where he'd been when he'd heard those words the first time, 10 or 11, and huddled by the fire, with a handful of other boys his age, as his grandfather taught them the things they would need to know when they were men. He had no idea why he was thinking of that tale right at this moment. Hadn't Sage said that werewolves were just the tip of the iceberg as far as monsters were concerned? And she had been right. Anna said, "Some days, this Omega gig sucks worse than others. What is it with everyone's throwing themselves on me?"
"It's the wolf," said Charles absently. "The wildlings, most of them, have worn out their ability to control their wolf. The wolf spirit wants to be close to you, and their human half cannot restrain it."
"Sorry," said Jericho, closing his eyes. "I'm sorry."
Charles could hear it in his voice, smell it in his scent. Jericho was sorry. So why was Charles feeling like he was overlooking something important? He asked Brother Wolf, who understood what he was feeling, but didn't know what it was either. He was no help at all.
"Sage will be long gone," Anna said.
She didn't sound too unhappy about it. He appreciated how she felt.
"A lifetime of never hearing, 'Hello, hello, Charlie,'
again." But they could not allow a traitor to live. Devon made a noise, and then Jericho said,
"No, no, we can still get there."
He started to get up, moving away from Charles to do so. He also moved away from Anna, and Charles had to put the wildling back down on the ground to keep him from attacking Anna again.
"No,"
growled Charles firmly.
"You and Devon go," said Anna. "If Devon knows the shortcut..."
She put her hand on Jericho's. He gripped her and relaxed again. Devon yipped. Anna looked at Charles.
"You and Devon can go and help them with Sage."
Tears welled up, and she wiped them off impatiently as she continued urgently,
"Sage, of all people, damn it! I know she can't be allowed to live, I know that. But you can make it quick. Leia won't, you know Leia. She plays with her prey as if she were a cat rather than a werewolf."
Jericho, released from Charles's hold again, sat up but made no other move.
"Jericho and I will stay here," Anna continued. "We will wait for someone to come back and tell us what happened. Then we can figure out something to do about this."
She made a waving motion to indicate their joined hands.
"Rare,"
his grandfather's voice.
"But deadly."
Charles, watching Jericho's icy wolf eyes, abruptly remembered the story his grandfather had been telling that day, when Charles had been a child.
"She wore the skins of her victims,"
his grandfather told them, his voice shaky with age.
She wore the spirit and memories, too, as if they were clothing. She cried when my aunt would have cried, laughed when she would have laughed. Her own husband and their children could not tell that the monster in their home was not their beloved one. Only I saw the monster wearing my aunt's skin. And I was only a little boy younger than any of you are now. I had no one to show what I had seen because there was no one else in the village to see her for what she was. My mother's uncle, who was our medicine man and my first teacher, had died the year before. That fall, though, a trading party came to camp, and their shaman came with them. I told him about my aunt and asked for his help. He came with me to the fire where my aunt and uncle were sitting, and he told my uncle that his wife had been taken by evil. My uncle, he did not believe the strange medicine man, nor the affidavits of his power that the man's companions were quick to give. The thing who wore my aunt's face cried and begged my uncle not to hear the stranger's words. While she was pleading, this medicine man walked up and placed his hand on my aunt's head. She quit talking, frozen in place by the great power he held.
Charles's grandfather sighed.
I was there. And still, what happened is so strange that I do not know how to build a picture for you.
He'd fallen silent and watched the fire as if he had not noticed the terror he'd inspired in his audience. For weeks afterward, he would be asked to examine someone's mother or aunt or uncle to make sure they had not been taken.
That old man, Charles's grandfather said, he sang a song to her in a language I had never heard before and have not heard since. After a moment, he raised his other hand and put it out, so.
He put one hand down, as if it rested upon the head of a woman. He put the other one up.
Then he tipped his hand over slowly until it was palm down, too. And under his hand, another person formed. As real as you or I, an old woman, naked, sitting in the same position as my aunt. Then my aunt fell to the side. For a moment I thought he had saved her. But she was truly dead. Her corpse rotted until it was as any body that had been dead over a year would have been. The medicine man changed his song, and he sang for a very long time. Eventually, the naked woman disappeared, and the medicine man was left with the feather of a bird in his hand.
Charles's grandfather looked each boy in the eye.
Afterward, that old man sat down with me and explained what the monster who took my aunt was. He said, "A medicine man, healer, or shaman, who has given up his connection with the way of the earth, is more evil than anything I have ever met. And in my youth, I hunted the stick men, and three separate times I brought down the hunger that devours. When those who are sent to do good turn from that path, when they gain power and long life by stealing life from others, there is no evil greater." He had, he told me, seen only one other such. The creature who took my aunt is the only one I have ever seen. They are rare and dangerous. Hard to see them. But if you look in their eyes, if you keep watch, it is their eyes that give them away. There is only one way to kill them, if you are not a medicine man, such as he or I. that is with fire.
Jericho, said Charles, softly.
A quick change, my brother, he asked the wolf. As quick as we ever have, for Anna's sake.
Then, opening his mating bond as widely as he could, he said,
Anna, I need you to do something for me.
The wildling looked at him, and so did Anna.
Jericho,
said Charles again, heavily. This time it wasn't a request for the other's attention.
Jericho's wolf's eyes are yellow. Run, he told Anna. Run, and do not stop.
Chapter 11 Anna bolted before her brain caught up to her feet.
Skinwalker, Brother Wolf breathed into their bond. The Diné would call him a skinwalker. Such as he can only be killed by fire or a medicine man's magic.
And then Brother Wolf drove her to her knees with the sudden, complete memory of a smoky, dimly lit place where eight boys listened in terror as an old man told them a warning tale about a monster. And the information the old man had given those boys terrified her, too. Devon whined. Anna turned her head to see that he was trotting back and forth, watching the battling wolves, because apparently whatever wore Jericho's body didn't have a problem making a quick shift to wolf. Given what she now knew about Jericho, she should be running.
Devon, she said. Devon, that's not Jericho.
She remembered what Charles had said before he attacked.
Jericho's wolf had yellow eyes.
Devon froze and looked at her.
Skinwalker, she told him. They kill the people whose form they want, then they steal it. They wear their whole person like a coat. It's not Jericho, Devon. He's dead. And the skinwalker stole his body and his memories to wear.
Flesh and spirit, Charles's grandfather had said. That must be why the blood bonds between the Merrick and the wildlings had not warned him, and through the Merrick the rest of the pack. But the thought of it made her want to be sick. How much of Jericho was left? Did he understand what the skinwalker was doing? Or was he truly dead, and spirit meant something different?
Anna, said Charles, I cannot defeat him. I have magic, but it's not the kind that my grandfather meant. He meant the magic of a holy man. Get out of here, my love. Get out of here and warn the others. Call my Da and tell him he...
His voice in her head broke off as the air around the thing that was Jericho rippled where the werewolf had been. And in its place was a bear far larger than the grizzlies that roamed the pack territories.
Anna, please, Charles implored.
You must survive to tell our Da, in case he takes us, said Brother Wolf. He won't be able to tell until it is too late.
Charles expected to die. He expected to die and that the skinwalker would take his shape, as the skinwalker had probably been planning on doing to Anna after separating her from the others by sending them off after Sage. Sage had known what the skinwalker was, had known who it was. That's what those strange at the time requests had been while Jericho had been talking. Sage and the skinwalker knew each other. And Sage had been asking Jericho, who was not Jericho, not to betray her to them. They had been looking for Wellesley. Jericho, who was not Jericho, had called him Frank Bright, the name Wellesley had used before he'd come here. They'd gone to Hester and to Jericho because Anna would put money on this. Those were the only two wildlings whose homes Sage had been to. But sometime during the attack on Jericho, the skinwalker had seen the chance to do more than that, to become one of the Merrick's pack. Anna tried to visualize what she'd seen when that stink bomb had gone off and driven Charles off the trail. Had it come from Jericho, who had been on the trail above Charles? Charles, in wolf form already, was the one most likely to catch Sage,
but the distraction had also allowed the skinwalker to isolate Charles and Anna from the rest. And ultimately, Jericho had been trying to isolate Anna. And then there was Sage. Had she been looking for Wellesley for over 20 years? Or had her primary purpose been as a spy? Later, Anna told herself, she'd figure it out later. She would not allow the skinwalker to have her mate. Charles had to keep fighting while she looked for a way to kill it. Anna didn't know where a holy man was to be found, but she did know that they had just burned down a cabin, and all three of the vehicles parked only a couple of miles down the trail had been at Hester's cabin yesterday, and Asil had been in charge of the fire. While she'd been thinking, only a second or two, she was pretty sure, Devon had disappeared. Apparently, the Kodiak bear that had appeared in Jericho the Wolf's stead had convinced him when she had not. Anna rolled to her feet and sprinted for where they'd left the vehicles. There wouldn't be a holy man waiting for her, but maybe someone would still have things that she could use to set a skinwalker on fire. She tried not to remember that she'd ridden in two of those vehicles and didn't recall noticing the smell of anything volatile. The cars were all locked. Since Asil had been in charge of Hester's pyre, his was the first car she assaulted. She could probably have broken the latch on the back hatch, but wasn't sure enough to try it. If she failed, she might just jam the stupid thing, and that would slow her down further. So she broke the driver's side window with her elbow. A rock would have saved her some pain, but she was too worried about time to look around for a rock. "Keep him busy," she muttered to her husband. But she didn't send it along their bond. She didn't want to distract him. That Kodiak had been as big as a truck and unholy quick. Charles was the boogeyman of the werewolves. He could take a bear, no matter how big it was. And all he had to do was hold on until she got back. She popped the back hatch of Asil's Mercedes open with a button and found a barbecue lighter, but nothing else. Nor was there any sign that there had ever been anything else. Knowing Asil, he probably had C4 stashed in sealed containers along with detonators somewhere in the car. But no one but Asil would be able to find it. She wondered if C4 would kill the skinwalker, as well as firewood. "Come on, come on," she said, frustrated at the empty vehicle. "It's a start, but I need something bigger." Not too far away, she heard the sound of a motorcycle, and wondered if Sage had planned far enough ahead to have stashed a vehicle to use, or if she had just found it somewhere. Anna supposed it might be someone else, but the wildlings lived in the most remote corners of the Pack territory, so it was unlikely. She broke the window on Sage's SUV with her left elbow, since her right was still sore from Asil's car. A quick search, during which the motorcycle appeared to be approaching closer, showed her that there was nothing in Sage's car that would be useful. But she grabbed the witch gun and tucked it into the back of her jeans. She was pretty sure that the old shaman who talked to Charles's grandfather would have tried a witch gun on a skinwalker if he'd had one. The motorcycle rider must be coming here, because this was remote enough that there wasn't anywhere else. That seemed to indicate that whoever it was not Sage after all. If she had a motorcycle to escape on, Sage would be riding away from here as fast as she could go. The shell on the back of Leia's pickup wasn't locked. In the bed of the truck, bungee-corded to the side, was a battered, metal, 5-gallon can of gasoline. "Hallelujah," she said. "Just keep him busy, Charles. I'm coming." She hopped out of Leia's truck with the full gas can in one hand and the lighter in the other, just as the motorcycle, carrying a helmetless Wellesley, roared up the track. He slid the dirt bike to a stop with all the aplomb of a motocross maven.
"What's wrong?"
Wellesley asked, at the same time she asked him, "What are you doing here?" He waved at her to get her to answer his question first. "Charles," she started to tell him, then realized how long that would take. "I don't have time for this," she told him impatiently, and took off up the trail, carrying the mostly full 5-gallon can and the lighter. She didn't care if she lit the whole forest on fire, just so long as she saved Charles. Wellesley ran beside her. He made no effort to take the gas can from her.
"Talk while you run," he said.
"If I can talk," she retorted, increasing her pace, "then I'm not running fast enough." Apparently, he could run and talk at her fastest pace, because he said,
I'm here because my wolf spirit woke me up from a sound sleep and told me that our enemy was this way. So what are you trying to burn,
Anna Cornick?
Why are you in such a hurry to do it?
Skinwalker, panted Anna. Deciding talking might be useful after all, she slowed enough that she could manage short sentences. I think that's the Native American version of a black witch.
Wellesley smiled, his eyes bright gold, and when he spoke, his voice had a rasp of wolf in it, too.
I know what a skinwalker is. There was a skinwalker at Rare Springs. She is here.
It's a him, Anna huffed.
Doesn't matter to her what form she takes,
said Wellesley.
Male or female.
There was a lot of confidence in his voice.
You remembered what happened at Rhea Springs, she said.
I did,
he said.
I remembered.
Pain hit her through her mating bond, sharp and sudden. She put a foot wrong and tumbled into a tree, unable to catch her balance while her mind was consumed with agony that had nothing to do with her fall. The thing that wore Jericho's flesh had not been a werewolf for long enough to figure out how to fight in that body. It didn't take the skinwalker long to figure that out and take on another form. The Kodiak, the grizzly's bigger, stronger brother, outweighed Charles 5-1, and it was very nearly as quick as he was. But it wasn't the first bear Charles had fought, not even the first Kodiak. He preferred to leave them alone if he could. Even a werewolf had its limits, and a Kodiak was very close to them. But there were times, like now, when the fight could not be avoided. Charles was more maneuverable and, Brother Wolf was certain after the first few minutes of battle, more experienced at utilizing the abilities of Brother Wolf's form than the skinwalker was used to using the bear's form. Even so, the bear made the skinwalker much more formidable and less clumsy than he'd been as a wolf. This bear form was something he'd fought in before. When dealing with a predator larger than he, Charles liked to use the hit-and-run method of fighting. It was less effective against the bear than he liked. The bear had a thick, tough hide, covered by thick, tough fur, and a layer of fat beneath that. Although Charles was able to get a lot of surface cuts in, they weren't deep enough to be anything more than annoying. But engaging the bear fully was likely to end up with Charles flattened under the bear's greater strength. The trick to fighting bears was to tire them out. The single hit the bear had gotten in had cracked 3 ribs. Charles, remembering just in time that he could draw upon the pack's strength for healing, managed to stay maneuverable, though he didn't heal them entirely. Even with pack magic, the bones were likely to remain fragile for a day or two, and a little pain would remind him of that. Additionally, he didn't want to use up all that he could draw from the pack. It had taken a lot of power to free Wellesley. And although there were some real heavy hitters in his pack, he didn't have the experience to know what the limits were. He learned something about the skinwalker in the opening bit of hit and run, too. Most of the time, Charles was fighting the bear's intelligence and not the skinwalker's. Most of the time, the bear fought like a bear, which was smart on the part of the skinwalker, because that bear knew how to fight. But if he was fighting a bear, there were some things Charles could do. He got in a second deep bite on the bear's flank, right on top of a previous wound. And this time, his fangs dug into meat. It was also a place the bear couldn't reach him, so he held on until the bear's flesh began to give under his fangs. He waited until the bear started to move, just before the meat would have given way and dumped Charles on the ground. Then, digging in with all 4 clawed feet, Charles scrambled right over the top of the beast. He took the opportunity to attempt to dig into the bear's spine, just behind the ribs, where there was the least flesh protecting it. His teeth closed on bone, but when the bear rolled, he let the grip go. Charles ran and turned to face the bear from a distance of about 20 feet. It wasn't a safe distance. He didn't want a safe distance. His only intention was to fight as long as possible, to give Anna time to warn everyone. He'd done more damage than he'd thought. A chunk of bear hide the size of a hand towel had been pulled to the side, flapping like a loose horse blanket. Blood scented the air and dripped onto the ground.
But when the bear moved, it was clear that, gruesome as it was only a flesh wound, impressive but minor, and it wasn't bleeding enough to weaken him. But it hurt. The great bear reared up and roared, its upright form nearly 10 feet tall. Any creature more intelligent than a bear would have been too smart to do that with the steep slope of the mountain behind it. Charles took a running leap and hit the bear in the face with his body, sending the bear tumbling backward down the side of the mountain. The beast's teeth opened a gash in Charles's shoulder, but it hadn't been expecting the move, so it was slow. It wasn't able to get a good hold, and Charles fell free. Charles tumbled a few paces, but was back on his feet and harrying the bear as it rolled the 50 yards or so of very steep, rocky ground all the way to the bottom. When it rolled to a stop before it could get its feet under it, Charles landed on its back and went for the spine, now showing whitely in its bed of flesh. He closed his jaws on bone and shook as hard as he could. Beneath him, the bear tried first to get to its feet, and then just to roll over. But it had fallen awkwardly, and Charles was able to keep it from finding the leverage to do much more than wiggle. It gave a hard lurch, and the spine separated with a pop and a grisly crunch. The bear's rear quarters fell limp, and Charles bounded away from the still dangerous front end. The bear's blue, human eyes regarded him balefully as it roared and snapped its teeth together. Charles growled, showing the skinwalker his own fangs. He stayed back as his opponent thrashed and struggled, apparently paying no attention to anything other than reaching Charles. Charles gradually became aware of aching muscles, stiffness in his left shoulder, and the persistent ache of his ribs. Eventually, the blood loss, made worse by the bear's refusal to be still, won out. The giant beast gave one last heave and collapsed on the torn-up ground. It breathed 4 times. Then the air whooshed out with a sigh, and the blue eyes glazed over. Charles waited. He did not remember a time that his grandfather had been wrong about something. Charles was not a holy man, and so he should not have killed the skinwalker. But unarguably, the skinwalker in the bear's form lay dead. Charles's ears could not pick up the sound of his enemy's heart beating. He waited until his nose told him that death had begun its work, the body had started to decompose, before he decided that his grandfather had been mistaken. Werewolves were not native to this continent. Perhaps that was why his grandfather had not mentioned werewolves as a way to kill skinwalkers. Charles looked for Devon. He'd have thought that the wildling would have joined in the fight on Jericho's side. Jericho was Devon's friend, and Charles and Devon were only acquaintances. But Devon was nowhere to be seen, his scent just a hint on the wind. Whatever Anna had told Devon when she wasted time that she should have used to get away had been effective. Now that he had scared her to death, he supposed he'd better let her know that 1,500 pounds of Kodiak hit him like a bulldozer. His shoulder crunched against a tree, and screaming agony flared throughout his body. Somehow, the skinwalker's magic had concealed the sound of movement, the rebirth of the bear, and the feel of blood magic at work, so the bear had taken Charles completely by surprise. In his head, a quavering old man's voice said,
"My grandson, why do you always have to learn the hard way?"
Leia ran, focused on her goal. She was taller than Asil and Juste both, and she outpaced them. She was a skilled hunter, and she learned from others' mistakes. She did not allow herself to get close enough to Sage to fall victim to one of her witchy tricks, as Charles had. But she kept Sage in sight. She had the advantage on this ground, she thought. With her mate, she had traveled every foot of their territory, stayed up late at night discussing the topography, its strengths and weaknesses. She knew, for instance, that Sage was trying to take them on a roundabout route to the cars. Sage was hoping that they would let her get far enough ahead that she could take one of them and escape. Never had Leia so resented the protocol that forbade cell phones. It would be nice to alert the pack,
so that they could set up roadblocks on all of the ways that Sage could take her wussy SUV out of these mountains. Maybe even get someone up here in time to disable Sage's car. But the nearest phone was at Jericho's cabin, and that was too far to do them any good. Leia was pretty sure that Sage didn't have the knowledge to start one of the cars without a key. Thank heavens that Charles had left his old truck at home. Even Leia could hotwire a truck from that era in about 10 seconds flat. She had a gun, concealed in a shoulder holster, but didn't bother to take it out. She was a decent shot, but at this pace, she would be unlikely to hit Sage. Besides, killing Sage with a gun would be so much less satisfying than killing her with her knife. She jumped a tree, tucking her feet up so as not to catch a toe. Sage was keeping to rough ground where she could because Leia was faster even on 2 feet than Sage was on 4. Some of that was because Leia ran in her human form every day. Some of it was that Leia was built like a runner. But most of it was that, as the Merrock's mate, second in the pack, she could draw on the strength of the pack to aid her muscles. She kept Sage's wolf in sight, though the light and dark golden-brown coat was better even than Leia's own tawnier fur at blending in the light and shadow of the forest they ran through. After a couple of miles, Juste and Asil were some distance behind them, and she was just settling into her stride. But that was all right. She could take Sage. Her mate told her that her attitudes were stuck in the 19th century. She knew that Bran worried that her lack of confidence when facing down a male opponent would get her hurt someday. But she had him for that, and there wasn't a female werewolf on the planet she was afraid of. They were nearly back where they had started, a trick of the trail Sage had been taking. That meant they were about 2 miles from the cars. Sage tossed a look over her shoulder, and Leia could see the consternation wash over her when she saw Leia. She'd really thought she could outrun Leia. She wasn't the first person to underestimate Leia. Most of them were dead. Her mate was the only person who truly saw her. He might not like her. Leia knew that, and it didn't bother her much. But Bran Cornick appreciated her skills and her strengths, and he respected her. He didn't truly respect many people. She would make do with that. She increased her speed, narrowing the distance between them. Even Bran would be surprised that it was she and not his son who killed their traitor. She was barely 100 feet short of Sage when she felt a shivery light in the pack bonds that told her one of their pack had been gravely injured. Who? She slowed her approach, letting Sage's lead grow again, as she searched through the ties that bound her to her pack. Charles. How did Charles get hurt? It doesn't feel like magic, so it isn't an effect of whatever Sage threw in his face. Leia had been a werewolf a long time, and she knew how to read the bonds. This was a physical hurt, grave enough to mean death. A bear roared its triumph from the direction of Jericho's cave. What in the world made Charles take on a bear when we have a traitor to catch? She set 1 foot down and pivoted on it. Sage would have to wait. No, it would not hurt her if Charles died. She didn't like him, and she'd never made any bones about it. He was sullen and silent, and she was more scared of him than she was of anyone, not excluding Asil. But if a death of another wildling would hurt her mate, the death of his son would do far worse. And though she knew Bran did not love her, knew that love had no part in their long-ago bargain, it didn't matter. She loved her cold-hearted, flawed bastard of a husband and mate with all of her selfish heart. If she could save Charles, she would. And wouldn't Charles just hate that? She smiled widely as she ran, sweeping up Asil and Juste in her wake with a gesture of her hand. Crumpled against a tree, Anna looked up at Wellesley with tears in her eyes. "He's hurt," she said, too frantic to wonder if Wellesley would even know who she was talking about. "He's hurt. Nothing can kill it. Only a holy man or fire. And Charles has neither." Instead of answering her, Wellesley gathered the 5-gallon can and found the lighter where it had landed when she fell. Anna scrambled belatedly to her feet, feeling dizzy and lightheaded, though the pain had dimmed a little. She couldn't tell if it was because Charles had tightened down their bond or because he was losing consciousness. But pain meant he was still alive, and if he was still alive, there was no time to stand around, save mourning for when it was too late to do anything.
"Get me there," said Wellesley. "I can help."
And that's when she actually looked at him and paid attention to what she saw. Sometime between when they left him at his home, tired but whole, and now, he had resettled his person. This man was no harmless artist. Here was the man who had survived slavery of the worst sort, who survived a curse for nearly a century and emerged sane. Such a man could command armies, or a slightly battered Anna who had a skinwalker to kill. Despite the pain that drifted to her through the mating bond, Anna allowed herself a little hope. She took off again, trying to build her speed back up to where it had been. She didn't quite succeed. She'd twisted her ankle pretty good, and even with the increased healing her werewolf gained her, it hurt. Wellesley caught her elbow twice when she would have stumbled. Eventually, though it was probably only a couple of minutes, the pain faded, and she resumed her breakneck pace. They passed Jericho's cabin. Charles was still alive. Even if their bond was so quiet, it scared her. Shots rang out. Anna hesitated. Who was shooting? Charles didn't have a gun with him. Shaking off her surprise, Anna ran to the trail where she'd left him, but the fight had gone downhill and into the trees. She and Wellesley scrambled down until they could see over a second, even steeper drop-off to the battle royal below. Charles was crumpled in a heap, and Leia, Asile, and Juste were fanned out between him and the bear. Leia had a gun in one hand and a wicked-looking knife in the other. Asile had a bladed weapon somewhere between a knife and a short sword in length. It was dripping blood. Juste threw a fist-sized rock at the bear's head. A major league pitcher couldn't compete with a werewolf for speed or force. The bear tried to get out of the way, but the rock hit it in the head with a crack that knocked it off its feet. Anna would have plunged down the hill, but Wellesley caught her arm.
"Wait," he told her,
his eyes on the bear.
"I need you to stand guard. She will try to stop me when she notices what I'm doing."
She pulled her eyes off Charles and turned them to Wellesley and demanded, in a voice she barely recognized as her own, "Are you a holy man?
Are you asking if I can end this creature? I am the last descendant of the holiest family in my clan. The earth speaks to me. Can I end this creature?"
His smile was fierce.
"I don't know. But I have dreamed of trying for a very, very long time."
Wellesley pulled out a cloth folded into a pouch that smelled of garlic, chili, lemon, and some unfamiliar things. He crouched and gathered old leaves, dried grass, and a few sticks. He quickly cleared a space of anything burnable and used the fuel he'd gathered to build the makings of a miniature fire, dumping the spice mixture on top of that. Below them, Leia put three rounds into the bear, and Juste hit it with another rock. Of the two bullets or rock, the rock seemed to do the more damage. But it was light-footed Asile who made the killing stroke, leaping on top of the wounded bear and sliding his blade between its shoulder blades and through its spine. Wellesley knelt on the ground and, though Anna had brought him 5 gallons of gasoline and a barbecue lighter, he lit the fire by holding his hand over it and murmuring a word that made the hair on the back of her neck stand up. He closed his eyes and began to sing, more of a chant, really, in a liquid language she'd never heard before. She looked around for something to help her defend him, and ended up piling stones of an appropriate size. Juste's rocks were proving effective, and she knew how to throw a baseball. It was too bad, she thought ruefully, that she wasn't witchborn. The gun would probably be a much better weapon than...
"You have something that belongs to the skinwalker," said Wellesley.
chanting the words in the same rhythm he'd been using so that she almost missed that he was talking to her. "I have this," she told him, and pulled the